Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the Community Health Planning and Policy Development Section session titled America's Changing Neighborhoods. Thank you for waking up this early in New Orleans after a windy night and probably a lot of fun to join us. We have four excellent and interesting and diverse presentations this morning. My name is Shannon Mace Heller. I'm the Director of Policy and Planning for the Baltimore City Health Department, and I'll be moderating this session. A few housekeeping notes. One, there are the Community Health Planning and Policy Development sections materials, I believe, are somewhere in the back of the room for the other sessions for the conference. Also, I'm going to go through all of our presenters' biographies at the outset to save time in between the presentations, and we're also going to hold question and answers until after all four presentations. All right, so our first presentation is titled Urban Myopia, Confronting Homelessness in the Hinterlands of Houston, Texas by Catherine Kate Lester. Kate Lester is a graduate student studying health geography at the University of North Texas. Her main research area is the geography of mental illness and homelessness. She returned to school and began studying health geography after serving in the AmeriCorps VISTA, working to connect survivors of Hurricane Ike with mental health care. She works primarily with location allocation techniques to evaluate and improve health care delivery systems. Our second presentation is titled Framework and Methodology to Monitor and Assess Likely Gentrification Displacement Impacts from Transit-Oriented Development by Dr. John Cho and Matthew Glesny. John Cho is a regional planner in the Department of Research and Analysis at the Southern California Association of Governments. In this position, he is responsible to lead and support research in regional transportation planning. His research interests cover various topics in the general field of transportation planning. These include transportation and public health, sustainable transportation systems, freight transportation and logistics, and socioeconomic impact analysis of transportation. He received his PhD in industrial and systems engineering and Master of Science in Civil Engineering, specialized in transportation planning and engineering from the University of Southern California. Matthew Glesny is the housing planner for the Los Angeles Department of City Planning. In this position, he is responsible for updating the city's main housing policy document, tracking housing production, and advising the department on various housing issues. He is also the department's liaison to the Southern California Association of Governments. Prior to moving to Los Angeles, he was a housing researcher for the Voorhees Center for Neighborhood and Community Improvement, where he worked with community and nonprofit organizations on issues of affordable housing and community development. He has a master's degree in urban policy from the University of Illinois at Chicago, and a Master of Fine Arts in Urban and Regional Planning from the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign. The third presentation is titled Refugee Settlement Communities, Public Health System Challenges in Resource-Constrained Times by Dr. Rosemary Caron. Dr. Caron is the former director of the University of New Hampshire's MPH program. She is currently a faculty member in the UNH Department of Health Management and Policy and teaches public health courses to undergraduate and graduate students. Prior to coming to academia, she practiced public health for 10 years at the local, state, and private consulting levels. Our final presenters are Joel Staffer, who is currently an assistant professor of surgery in the Division of Public Health Sciences at Washington University School of Medicine, a Robert Wood Johnson Foundation New Connection Scholar, and chair of the Healthy Eating Active Living Partnership in St. Louis, Missouri. Her primary expertise is the assessment and analysis of physical activity, resources for physical activity in schools, and the community and social and built environment's impact on health. Second presenter is Dr. Cassandra Arroyo Johnson, who is core faculty for the PhD program in public health in the School of Health Sciences at Walden University. Dr. Arroyo received her PhD in biostatistics from Harvard University and completed a postdoctoral fellowship in social epidemiology at Morehouse School of Medicine. Her research interests include social and behavioral determinants of diabetes and the application of CBPR methods for chronic disease prevention and management. And with that, I will turn it over to Kate. Thank you.
All right, good morning. I'm going to fake being a morning person for 20 minutes. So I am Catherine Lester, and we'll start with this. The following personal financial relationships with commercial interests relevant to this presentation existed during the past 12 months. No relationship to disclose. I am a graduate student. They don't pay me anything. So I am a graduate student at the University of North Texas. We are one of only a handful of schools in the United States to offer a geography degree specifically with a health focus. So when we saw the APHA healthography theme, we said, okay, we have to send someone to represent. So this is kind of a slice of my master's thesis. So this is some of the work that we're doing, some of the things that we're kind of starting to look at. So, in geography, we have a history of looking at homelessness and mental health, and in like most of the social sciences, we tend to look at these groups together. It's very difficult to kind of suss them apart, especially when you're looking at things across space. So, from a geographic perspective, one of the biggest things to ever happen was the implementation of community-based care. We got rid of the asylums, essentially, slowly, and moved people into supposedly communities with clinics and all these sorts of things that are supposed to support them, which is a great move. But there was one really huge geographic flaw, and that was that there was really no overarching plan for how we were going to locate these clinics, supportive housing, shelters. So what happened was because things tend to be underfunded, as I think we all know, and there's a lot of stigma against this group, pretty much all of the services ended up in what was at the time the most blighted parts of the city, the central city, that had been left completely vulnerable by white flight and deindustrialization. By 1977, Michael Deere, who's one of our biggest stars in homelessness geography, coined the term psychiatric ghettos. Essentially, what he said was that because of the flawed implementation of community-based care, we've created asylums without walls. So over the decades, there have been a few studies that have come out on homelessness and geography. One of the big things that we've discovered and that is really important is the concept of re-traumatization. The idea that becoming homeless is incredibly traumatic, but moving, even if it's just across the city, is even more so. And I am from Texas. I study Texas. And in the Texas context, if you essentially move into a shelter, you are almost certainly going to lose your job, lose your car. And half of the homeless people in Texas right now are in groups with children. So they're out of their schools. This is a big deal. In the 90s, we figured out that there were homeless people in the suburbs. And up until that point, it had kind of been assumed that that wasn't the case. And so a lot of what I am looking at with this project is what are these assumptions that we've made that we continue to make in policy planning kind of on the fly that are not serving our people. The past few years, the Department of Housing and Urban Development has been pushing this idea of rapid supportive housing. Essentially, the idea is that up until really very recently, we used housing as a carrot. So you go through your therapy, you get a job, you do all these things that we ask of you, and then we'll give you an apartment. And it turns out that that's probably all completely backwards. It's incredibly difficult to try to recover from any kind of mental health issue, try to hold a job, keep, get mail, get phone calls, any of these things if you don't have a place to live. So the idea is that in Houston, at least, because this is my study area, the goal is to make sure that no one spends more than one night in a shelter. After that one night, you should be in some kind of supportive housing where you can get the services you need, you know you have a bed to sleep in every night, and you don't have to wait in line. The other part about Houston, so Houston's trying to pilot this program. They're starting construction already. The other thing about Houston is that they're really targeting their chronically homeless population. And the chronically homeless population are people who have either been homeless for over 12 months or have been homeless four more times in the past 3 years. There are about 2,000 of these individuals in Houston. About a third of them are fully employed, and most of them sleep on the streets. One of the unique features, well, it's not really unique, it's pretty common across homelessness in the United States and other countries, but half of the chronic homeless in Houston have some kind of serious mental illness, and half have some kind of serious physical illness. So implementing the supportive housing plan, they're also trying to put it next to community clinics, and not just any community clinics, federally qualified community clinics that offer both primary care and mental health care. We're doing that to try to get around the stigma of mental health, but also we have a huge provider shortage problem in Texas. We just don't have the mental health people to do it. And so we're trying to use maybe some primary caregivers to intercede early at first and then see if we need to refer people out. The problem is, if supportive housing is to be tied to health care, then building supportive housing around mismatched services will only make the problem worse. In other words, if we have one of these psychiatric ghettos, if we've been doing this thing where we put all of our services in one place, we concentrate our vulnerable people in space, then if we build our supportive housing around it, we're introducing more fixed cost into a system that maybe is creating more trauma than it's helping. So the main question with this research is, are blended service community clinics located in areas where those who need it have easy access? So quick note on Houston. Texas has the lowest per capita mental health spending in the country. We only spend $38 per person per year on mental health. Compare that with Arizona, which isn't necessarily known for being very liberal. They're at about $200 a person. Alaska's at $400, but they have special things going on. We are really super-duper neoliberal. We are the largest neoliberal city in the country. There's really no zoning for the most part. And generally, they've taken a hands-off approach to government in almost every area. Historically, Houston is favored, and Texas in general, punitive policy, where we basically punish people for being homeless. This has changed dramatically in the last couple years with the new mayor, and there have been a lot of success stories with homelessness in Houston. And so this initiative that I'm looking at is just one of many of them. Okay. Houston is heavily dependent on energy, as you may or may not know. Oil is king. And so this shapes the way the city has developed and the way economics kind of work and funding works. And Houston is majority-minority. At this point, 43.7% of the residents of Houston are Hispanic, and another quarter are black. So this also has some implications for how services are delivered. I'm going to give you a quick introduction to my methods. I'm not going to go into too much detail because I'm not at a geography conference, but if you want to know more, let me know. This is my thing. I use location allocation models, and in this case, I used a p-median. Essentially, what this does is this assigns population to clinics to reduce the median distance people have to travel. This model creates convenient locations for people, the most convenient that we can. The inputs that you need to run this model are the existing clinics and where they're at, and currently there are 21 of these clinics in Houston. Demand weight, you have to figure out where is the need? Who needs this? And so this is actually, I derived this from wellness scores, which were taken from the Collaborative Psychiatric Epidemiology Surveys, which were run by the National Institute for Mental Health, 2001 to 2003, and poverty. Essentially, the thinking here is to need to use a community clinic, you need to both be sick and poor. And the wellness scores also take into account self-rated wellness. So it's people telling you how sick they are, because as we know, people don't believe they're sick, they won't use the services. And if we have services that don't get used in Texas, we lose that money forever. And then I also had it tell me where it would build five new clinics. These five new clinics are going to show me where we currently have underserved areas, people that maybe have to travel a very long distance. And if they're on top of other ones, then we're good to go. There's no mismatch. And my data sources other than the CPES, is the U.S. Census American Community Surveys. These are the easiest places to get spatial data. So this is one of the maps that I've produced. So there are a couple things here. The first thing is that these black dots show where my new clinics are. The new clinics, for the most part, pulled to the far outside parts of the city. Now, the city of Houston is a really weird shape, as you may notice. It kind of looks like a cancer. That's because the city of Houston is trying to spread out as far as it can. At the moment, Houston is about 760 square miles, just the incorporated city. The metropolitan area comprises 12 different counties. So what this shows is wellness scores. And, okay, the way this model works is the smaller the catchment area, and all of these units are catchment areas, so there's a clinic in each one. The way this works is that the smaller the catchment area, the better the access. So here's what we're seeing. We have better wellness scores in catchment areas with better access. Our sick people are not in these places where it's really easy to get to clinics. We see a similar thing with poverty. In general, the lower the poverty, the better the access. And we have this big, it's very vulnerable, eastern side of the city that really is not very well served. Clinics with better access also have fewer Hispanic residents, fewer black residents, smaller household sizes, lower unemployment, fewer vacant properties, and fewer children. Essentially, almost every vulnerable population we look at, they don't have the access that we want, and they're not in the central city anymore. This is a vulnerability score. Essentially, this just is a composite measure, including unemployment, rental housing, and crime. Again, we see that places with really good access are not super vulnerable to homelessness. Areas on the east side of the city that are highly vulnerable to homelessness maybe don't have the same access to clinics. So yes, there appears to be a spatial mismatch between need and available services. And so real quick, I'll just show you what kind of places this model found that are currently underserved. Greens Point, which is in the north part of the city, and southwest Houston are very similar. These were both the centers of the energy industry during the 1970s. When the oil boom busted, everybody left. These places are filled with back-to-back-to-back-to-back apartment complexes. And over the years, they haven't really been taken care of. The rent's gone down and down. And pretty much our vulnerable populations have moved in. These two areas are the largest black population areas in the city at this point. And after Hurricane Katrina, 150,000 people permanently relocated from New Orleans to Houston. Very large amount of those people were very poor and dependent on FEMA to help them get rehoused. They put almost everybody that they needed to house in one of these two neighborhoods because it was so cheap and no one was going to get upset. There was no political opposition to putting people in these neighborhoods. Essentially, we doubled down on vulnerability. The unemployment rate among people who moved to Houston after a year was over 40%. The other kind of neighborhood that this model kind of picked up on was in the southeast Houston area, and these are the largely Hispanic neighborhoods that are very close to the ship channel, heavy industry, oil refining, chemicals, concrete crushing, all of these environmental health hazards that really need some mitigation and people need some services, but they aren't really out there. We have serious food deserts out here where there's not even fast food, only gas stations. In areas where we do have commerce, it's a vulnerable economic mix. So it's strip clubs and liquor stores and fast food and pawn shops and check cashing. So, and this standing water, no drainage ditches, no street lights, no sidewalks. There's never been the political pull to get the city to put in any of this infrastructure. There was one more neighborhood I found, and essentially what happened was that my data's from 2010. It's too old. Houston's developing too fast. And so this need has probably moved. These old apartment complexes that used to be here have been replaced with luxury apartment complexes. And so this kind of brings home why we have to go do site visits. So we can't make assumptions about the geographic location of the population we serve. It's essentially what this comes down to. Urban structures are dynamic and contextual. Every city is going to have something special about it that makes their vulnerable populations behave in a different way. We have energy. Other cities have all kinds of different things. But geographers can help target services and reevaluate vulnerable neighborhoods. So there's some limitations. This doesn't include VA, mental retardation authority, other community services. Assumes people will use the closest facility, and it assumes equal capacity at each clinic. Of course, this is my master's thesis. I'm pretty sure to actually get this model going, it's going to take my entire career. So that's what I had for you this morning, and I think I made it just on time. So thank you so much. This is my email. Let me know if I can tell you anything else after the session.